You're listening to WYLL. I'm Chris Berube. Nick Offerman is a really interesting guy. He graduated from the University of Illinois theater program and bounced around for a bit, doing theater parts in Chicago and small roles on TV programs like Deadwood and Gilmore Girls. That's before he got the role of a lifetime as Ron Swanson on the NBC sitcom Parks and Recreation. It's a tough part to make likable. He's a laconic character and a curmudgeon, and even though he works for the government, he's also an outspoken libertarian.
The whole point of this country is if you want to eat garbage, balloon up to 600 pounds, and die of a heart attack at 43, you can. You are free to do so. To me, that's beautiful.
Offerman's performance is one of the best on TV, and the character's swanologues have become legendary. With Parks and Rec wrapping up its fifth season, Offerman is making a rare film appearance in a new movie called Somebody Up There Likes Me, which is available now on video on demand. It's about unhappy adults dealing with their most immature emotions. Here's a clip from the trailer.
The last 5 years, I wake up and it's like something fast-forwarded beyond my control. Some of you probably know that Max had one marriage go south prematurely. But this one looks like it's all systems go. Of course, that other one may well have looked like that at the beginning.
Even though Offerman's acting profile is continuing to grow, he's definitely a Midwesterner. He keeps up a woodworking shop, and he can often be found back in his tiny hometown of Minooka, Illinois.
Well, it's pretty small. There's not a lot to recommend it just yet. Although the poor boy sandwich at Cookie's Corner would be hard-pressed to beat that.
Growing up in Minooka, did you think that acting or, you know, theater was actually an option for you as a kid?
No, I didn't. I had a penchant for entertaining, for sure, and we did plays at my high school, but they were pretty rudimentary, and there wasn't a real cultural connection. I wasn't aware, for example, that theater was being done professionally in Chicago. When it was time to kind of choose a major, I was not aware that professional acting for the theater was an option. I was visiting the school with my girlfriend, who was a year older, because she was auditioning for the dance department, and I was literally loitering at the Krannert Center in the hallway waiting for her, and I met a couple theater students who said, "Hey, kid, you can't hang out in here." And I said, I don't remember what, I'm sure I said something incredibly charming, and we got to talking, and they explained that they were theater students, and so I discovered that that was a viable option if I could just get myself into the program. So I went home from that trip. I was a junior in high school, and I said, "Mom and Dad, I'd like to audition for this theater program."
Did they take you seriously when you said that?
They did. They knew me pretty well by then, and they knew that it was not my first harebrained scheme. Fortunately, I took a lot of tool skills with me to college from my dad and my farm family.
Yeah, I'd read an interview where you said that a lot of your early acting work was given to you because people were kind of hoping you would build the sets. Like, they were like, if we cast him in a small part, at least we'll have him, you know, he'll be here. He can fix stuff because he's handy.
Yeah, that was a pretty openly accepted arrangement. I was aware that I was not quite up to snuff in the talent department yet, and so I was happy to build the set in exchange for three lines.
So tell me a bit about Somebody Up There Likes Me.
Somebody Up There Likes Me is a really interesting, sweet little comedy. It's a bit of a cautionary tale about how we modern Americans all have a disaffected teenager within us. You know, we're so comfortable in this day and age that if we're not careful, we can allow all the big events in our lives to pass us by while we're too busy paying attention to the small events.
This was, I think, one of the first times, other than maybe Deadwood, where I've seen you and been like, oh, right, Nick Offerman isn't Ron Swanson. Like, to have that kind of dissociation between you and that character. Do you think sometimes that maybe, you know, there are certainly positives and negatives to being really, really tied to one character. Do you kind of have that reaction from people sometimes? Like, they expect you to be Ron Swanson if they meet you in person?
Sure, yeah. I like to remind them that Ron Swanson Swanson is delicious to them in 2 minute increments per week. And if I think if you ever had 90 minutes of him, he'd be exceedingly boring. You know, he would probably actually cane a chair seat and think it was the most wonderful thing in the world, and you'd think it was funny for about 30 seconds, and then you would realize, oh, he's really going to cane a chair for 90 minutes.
So you're saying the Ron Swanson movie, which I'm sure there are a lot of people out there who'd probably want to see that, but you think the Ron Swanson movie would be just like hollowing out a canoe or something?
Yeah, or literally, you know, a 90-minute treatise on chopping firewood. And the thing is, that's funny. That's a piece of humor to say the Ron Swanson movie would be a 90-minute treatise of chopping firewood. But to actually experience it would not be as funny as simply stating it. And that's what I just try to remind people is, people would be like, oh, that's amazing. I'm going to bring whiskey and bacon and watch it. And I think 5 minutes into it, you'd be like, are you really just going to keep swinging that axe? Jesus.
Do you have a favorite Ron Swanson line?
Boy, there's sure a lot of them I'm fond of. But one of our writers named Dan Gore wrote a line where Ron says they're in a bowling alley, and he says to Anne, this bowling alley has my favorite restaurant. And he looks over, and it's a little stand that says hamburger and hot dog. And she says, aren't you scared to eat there? And he says, when I eat, it is the food that is scared. I'm pleasantly surprised that anything I'm involved in has had that kind of popularity, but I think it's just a testament to our writing staff. When I consider it in those terms, then I'm not surprised, because I'm so grateful to have landed in this playroom with a group of people that are interested, but in dealing in comedy that has heart and fairness. And I really love being part of a show that's not cynical or mean or has a negative point of view, but instead deals in optimism. That really means a lot to me.
Something I kind of really love about Ron and about the whole show, it kind of seems like the whole show has just been about this curmudgeonly guy who really feels like a lone wolf or an individual, kind of being slowly worn down and kind of slowly warming up to the idea of, you know, community and government and friendship, I guess, over the course of the series.
You know, I think it's more like a big gnarly onion, always has those layers to it, but we're just slowly peeling them back season by season. I think Ron was initially intended to be more of an antagonist, and once they saw the chemistry between Ron and Leslie, the show creators said, oh, there's I think, much more to be mined here.
I've spoken to a number of comedians in the last few years who've mentioned having furniture that you have made. Is it possible to just buy furniture from you, or is that something that you kind of just do on, like, a friendship basis?
Well, it used to be more possible before I got this dreamy job on Parks and Rec. I still have a very burgeoning furniture concern at offermanwoodshop.com, and I have 4 or 5 young woodworkers under me building commissions that come in. My own time in the shop has become incredibly limited, so these days I kind of oversee everyone's work. Rarely am able to get my hands dirty. I was in there this morning for a couple hours, and we went over the week's work, and we have a canoe that one of our young ladies is finishing up for a client, and I'm getting ready to make a batch of ukuleles with one of our young guys who recently created a kazoo for the shop. I've turned it into a bit of a co-op, and so people can still get articles from my shop, just not with a lot of handwork on them from me personally.
What are you building ukuleles for?
Well, that's a silly question. I mean, in short, for joy. To engender mirth.
I didn't know if there was, like, a specific reason if you were going to start a ukulele orchestra or something. Okay.
No, I'm actually driving towards building acoustic guitars, and I thought making some ukuleles would be a good first step towards that effort.
I love that you've kept that up. Is it? I mean, is it kind of a therapeutic thing for you when you're not doing acting?
It is very much. It keeps me attached to my family and the feeling of, you know, I've been a laborer all my life, and I don't want to lose that work ethic. I think that having the ability to perform work that one loves is a great privilege. There's so many people who hate their job, and I'm lucky enough to get paid to do what I love, and so whenever I have the opportunity, I love to continue being a student of that craft, and that involves sharing it with others and opening my shop to other woodworkers. I love that Parks and Rec has allowed me to four or five other young woodworkers on their feet. It's you know, I hope to spread a wave of artisanry, of hand craftsmanship across the nation. I would like to see a return to a more Jeffersonian ideal in that regard.
Nick Offerman, thank you so much for doing this. I really appreciate you taking all this time.
Oh, my pleasure. I'd much rather talk to Champagne than New York any day of the week.
Ah, that's real sweet. Thank you.
The fifth season of Parks and Recreation had its finale last night, and his new film, Somebody Up There Likes Me, is available on VOD and is rolling out in theaters across America as we speak. I'm Chris Berube. You're listening to WILL Radio.